services, Lavazzi at boom1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello, welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 217. I'm Adam, and this week we have Mr. Kirby Barker-Sloan.
No complications.
Mary Lang.
So I said, Bonesy, an army marches on its stomach.
And Debbie Melrose.
Hello.
You haven't got a quote.
I haven't got a quote, sorry. I didn't know I was supposed to have one. I do apologise.
No quote.
I haven't got one either, just to even things out.
Did you not prepare her?
I'm afraid not.
Yes, I did. I've prepared you. I said, are you coming along this morning? And you said yes. And there we go.
That's about as prepared as I got. Yes.
Yes. Well, that's more preparation than a lot of people get for this show. So, because Kirby has been a bit slow in getting ready, we're going to have to crack straight on with the show, which is Day of the Daleks. I do hope I've got the volume down on this, otherwise it's going, oh, right, I've got subtitles. I need subtitles. Hang on. There we are, the data is. So it starts with the title sequence.
It does?
Yeah.
Fucking
actually,
amazing.
I must admit, when I watched this on my Blu-ray, the rendition of, or the rendering on John Pertwee's face looked particularly sharp and clear. Shut up, magic. So yeah, we start with a very spooky house, which actually the camera starts on... like an Egyptian sort of...
Now, are we looking at the original broadcast?
Yes, I did the original broadcast. I have watched the...
It's supposed to represent a medieval castle, country house.
Yeah, I thought it reminded me of Pyramids of Mars, which hadn't been made by this point. Mm. But I just thought that...
it's Dropmore House in Buckingham.
Oh, good grief. What were we talking about before you said about... I've forgotten now. Never mind.
Rendering or
face. Oh, rendering, yeah, no, we're talking about... Oh, never mind, I can't remember. Kirby, you asked me a question, I can't remember what it was. You've forgotten as well, haven't you? Yes, you did.
Yes.
Never mind.
You do realise it's 5:15 in the morning.
Yeah, but you asked me the question. Oh, never mind, anyway. So this old, pompous old Twitter's at Saturn's desk, and somebody turns up and sort of is just about to kill him and then disappears into a bad special effect. That's what we were talking about, the updated version that's on disc 2.
Yes.
I have watched that in the past and I think it's really, really good, but I thought for the benefit of this particular show, we do the original version. Because that's the most widely available.
I watched them, actually, no, if you bought the darn thing, you got both discs, so you can watch either one. Yes. I prefer the special version, the redone version.
So do I.
I watched the original one last night, and I found it wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
It was okay. Well, I'm saying that I prefer the new ones simply because the Dalek voices in this are abysmal, and
The Dalek voices weren't as bad as I thought they were going to be.
No,
and this was the first
pretty bad. They were unenthusiastic, Kirby. That's what I found.
Last night was the first time I watched the original broadcast version, even though I've had the DVDs for a while, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Okay, we're supposed to do the summing up at the end of the review, but never mind, we'll carry on. So there's a bit of a problem going on politically. There's a potential world war.
And only the Chinese can be, if they can be convinced, and it'll all be sorted.
Again, that was quite similar to what was going on in... the mind thingy, mind... What's that? The Mind of Evil, wasn't it? I think that's the one where there was a Chinese conspiracy going
Chinese
on.
Chinese delegates, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, but originally they were going to go... Stiles was going to go to New York rather than Peking. Mm. Actually, it's Beijing, but still.
Do you mean Beijing?
We'll forgive them.
Were you doing the correct pronunciation of Beijing?
Yes.
You are? Okay, I'll shut up then. Right. It's a shame that Americans can do the correct pronunciation of Beijing. That was what you just said. Was it Beijing?
Beijing.
Beijing.
Yeah. But they can't pronounce Nikon correctly. Now, that's a Japanese word, but they pronounce it Nikon. It's wrong. It's Nikon.
I can ask some of my co-workers if you want me to.
Look it up on YouTube. There was an American chap doing the correct pronunciation of Nikon. So I'm still going to call it Nikon, but it's correctly Nikon.
I work for a Japanese company and have lots of Japanese co-workers. I'll ask them.
Yeah, okay. Now, what got me, right, the previous story to this was Colony in Space, where they went in the TARDIS to another planet under control of the Time Lords, and now the console is back out of the TARDIS console room and in some sort of strange room.
He wants it to work for himself.
How they got the console through the police box doors, I'll have no
idea. Yeah, I think that's very likely they materialised it through the police box doors.
Well, the console is out of the TARDIS in Inferno as well. So now I don't know chronologically what follows what, but were there a series of stories where the console was outside?
There are not generally. There was a couple, wasn't there? I can't remember, Kirby, but I'm just waiting for him to come up with a list because he normally does. Yeah, there's also the scene where the Doctor and Joe are at the doors talking to Doctor and Joe, which is sort of slightly referred to again later on in the story, something to do with.
But they should have had the ending scene as scripted would have brought things all the way around. Before, yes. They didn't.
It's a shame, really. Anyway,
yes.
So, and it's really weird because you've got this lovely crispy video interior footage mixed in with a very poor film footage from outside.
That was typical for this.
I did notice as a videographer myself a very unusual camera angle for the day, which is a facial shot of this chap running around in the what's it, sort of the gardens of the grounds. That's a very GoPro sort of shot. I don't really see that much in the early 70s, so that was quite innovative.
Oh, with him grimacing at the camera.
That's the one. I'll just tip tea all over my printer. So this Sir Reginald Stiles chap, very pompous. But they always...
Nowadays denial. He cannot...
Yeah. No, he's not in denial, he's in the English countryside.
Nowadays you cannot get to that side of the canal.
Can you not?
There's fences and brambles and stuff. If you watch the Now and Then... feature on one of the discs.
Marvellous. Thanks for that, Gary. You called
Stiles stuffy. I thought he was pompous and stuffy too. Made me wonder how is it that he had this magical ability to make everybody come
out.
But the thing is, whenever in Doctor Who in the 70s they portrayed politicians, they were always portrayed in this way.
Old Etonians. Yes.
And it's quite funny because the Brigadier, who is also slightly pompous, is sort of straining against trying to punch the bloke in the face, which is also quite, goes against
well,
the
as we, when I started this story up the other night to watch it the first time through, Fred was watching with me, and she saw the unit was in it, and she's going, oh, I hope the Brigadier is in this. And then he showed up, and she went, yeah! She loves the Brigadier.
Anyway, they find a gun by the Clonal. One of those Blue Peter guns that some child sort of made and sent into the show. That was a joke, by the way, Kobe, so don't start looking it up on...
Ultrasonic disintegrator.
That's the one, yeah. And then sort of flash forward in time to Mr. Strange-speaking silver-faced man, the controller of the factory...
Who could take the sunshine, sprinkle it with dew? You mean that guy?
Yeah, that's the one.
The Ogrons are the Oompa Loompas.
Yes. Once I found out that he had been singing the Candyman, I could not watch his performance in this the same way again.
It took me a while to recognise him from that.
So the Doctor tests the gun that they found and is able to find out what it's capable of. Yes?
Wasn't it quite a coincidence that the dematerialization circuit in the future people's time machine was exactly like the dematerialization circuit that the Time Lords had just given the Doctor?
A mini version of it.
Yes.
Well, no, they hadn't given him it. That was a dematerialization circuit that he was actually... trying to fix himself. They haven't got to the time mills given in that yet.
Okay.
Good. I out-pedanted Kirby.
Thank you.
Oh boy. Yeah, we should celebrate.
That's impressive.
This.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so they've also acquired one of the little time transference devices, which the doctor's fixed, or fixing, I should say.
Fiddling with.
A misla-
fiddling with it. Yeah, I like that better.
No, well, if Mary said it, would probably be some innuendo involved in it, but we'll move on. yeah, so the doctor turns up to be a bit of a closet alcoholic.
He does appreciate that glass of wine.
He does like his wine and cheese, which is a quite a good combination, apparently. you can buy different wines and cheeses at the co-op, where, of course, we have special labels labelling which cheese goes with which wine. So. Anyway, carry on, Kirby.
I have nothing to carry on with.
Well, I thought that was quite educational, that, about cheese and wine.
Yeah, well, I thought it kind of interesting that this doctor appreciates wine so much, but as the doctors continue on in their regenerations, you know, that I guess they lose it somewhere.
Well, I would probably suggest that when a doctor regenerates, any illnesses get regenerated out of him. So alcoholism will be one of those things.
I love the whole business, the whole nonsense business about how the wine was good-humoured wine and it was sardonic but not cynical.
Much like myself, yeah, something like that, wasn't it? Yeah.
Anyway, Charlton Benson is getting a bit peckish and misses out because of
gets rank pulled on him, doesn't he?
Captain Yates's greed. So it's the first time we see a bit of the evil side of Yates, which obviously will come to the fore in the next series of Doctor Who.
Yeah, when I first watched this, I didn't really recognise that as Yates in. He wasn't acting like how I expected Yates, so
yeah,
I didn't recognize
him. I thought he was a different soldier altogether.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the second time watching through, I realized it was Yates.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I must say, there was Katie Manning puts on this sort of slightly high-pitched, squeaky voice for the character of Jo. Later on in the story, there's a point in which her sort of guard drops and her voice goes really deep. Shh. What's it got to do with you, Magic? It's my opinion. Anyway, so the other mercenaries appear. Now, one of the mercenaries has got a very familiar face from a future Doctor Who story, and I'm thinking that story might be the image of the Fendal. I may be wrong.
I believe you're correct.
Well, there we go. This is why I want Doctor Who quiz books, you see. I'll have to make a note of that. The bloke with the tash looks like he should have been in Village People.
actually, he was a. He'd been in several rock bands.
Had he?
Hence the moustache.
Yeah, Jimmy Winston is who you're talking about.
Is it? Okay.
I can't find
Debbie,
right now,
you must try and out-pedant Kirby because you might get to the bottom of the page before he does.
He was the original keyboard player with a group called Small Faces.
Really?
Yes. Oh, you've heard of them?
I've heard of them.
I've never heard of them.
I might have to insert Ichiku Park.
I'm pretty sure.
Anyway, moving on. Well, the drummer of the Small Faces, I believe, was Kenny. I forgot his name. Ended up the drummer of The Who after Keith Moon died. Moving back to Doctor Who, yeah, that's right. Moving back to.
Very good.
The Daleks appear at the end of episode one, and like I say, there's a bit of exterminator.
Yes, they appear along with the boom mic above.
Yes. Yeah, I saw you put that on Facebook, did you not?
Yes.
Some people might say you've got too much time on your hands, but I deny this. So these episodes are a bit weird because they start with the sting from the previous episode as well as the flashback. You've seen that?
Yeah.
Now, that's strange. Yes. I think that's just laziness on the editing people's front. You know? I think that's why that happened. That's my excuse for it. And the other weird thing about was the when they did a cut into like a Dalek view screen, they just sort of did a very lazy fade where the picture would sort of be the full shot of the bloke and then they cut it into a little corner. Do you not notice that? Or was that just me being a camera person?
No, they actually did that sort of effect twice. Hmm. It was intended to... They did this zoom out business where you saw the person in the cutout and they kept zooming out. They did it twice, and the first time they had a timing error. where they kept zooming out on the controller in the inset for 2 seconds longer than they had meant to do, which unless you are reading the infotext, you don't notice it.
Well, I did.
I thought it was pretty cool.
And I have my infotext on. The other thing I noticed was the title sequence almost appeared on the view screen at the end of one episode.
Yes, at the end of episode 3.
Yeah,
when they're scanning his mind.
Again, laziness on the editor's front.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I've got a burp coming. Sorry about that.
Better out than
you. Yeah, the little flappy door that the Steri controller steps through, it was quite good. It had a sort of curviness. I couldn't work out, actually, whether it was a genuine curviness or it was just a lens distortion that actually caused that.
No, it was curved. But when they were in that particular, I believe that was Studio 4 at Television Center.
Well, there you go.
The door was curved when they were filming in Studio 4. But when they moved to a different studio, which I'm sorry, I forget the studio number at the moment, for the final episode, they changed the door. And that this curvy door is just kind of hanging there, and they're using a straight door that they're pulling up and down because that studio is slightly larger, so they were able to – they had more room for the sets, and for some reason they decided not to do the curved door.
Oh, okay.
And that door took forever to raise and lower.
Oh, you've been reading the infotext as well, have you?
No.
I flipped through that really, really quickly. So basically the mercenaries turn up to murder the Doctor, and the Doctor very suavely indicates that he's not his original styles, and they look slightly disappointed that they can't kill him.
They're
going to kill him anyway, which I thought was quite funny.
Wouldn't he have just regenerated?
Depends how he's killed, isn't it?
I guess.
Anyway, they get put in a cellar and tied up really badly.
Yes.
With very bad string. I call it string, so you couldn't really call it rope, could you?
I like how he expects her to untie him, which she's having a hard time doing, but, I mean, he can't try to untie her?
Yeah, he's very good friends with Harry Houdini, so I'm a bit surprised he couldn't do it anyway.
That entire scene had been rewritten, and they weren't quite sure what they were going to do in there. They were running out of time at that point. Some of that scene had a automatic gun set up so that if they moved, it was going to shoot the Doctor. That was after Joe was removed, and the Doctor was going to untie himself with his toes at one point.
His toes?
His toes.
Right, okay. Anyway, talking about how badly tied up they were, it was whatever they tied their mouths up with. What was that? Tissues? Kleenex?
Kleenex. Yeah. That they were able to just stretch and push right out of the way.
Yeah, with their tongues. I mean, it was really terrible. There was a time, actually, one of the episodes, episode 3, I think, when Joe stepped over something. We got a flash of her knickers, which I thought should have perhaps been edited out for a children's program that time of the evening. Oh,
well, there's. What was that?
Stairs.
Upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Was it me?
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Oh, by the way, I just realised I forgot to record. I forgot to start recording my audio until just then. So, if the listeners are wondering why I suddenly sound really good, as opposed to really echoing really bad just a minute ago, it's because I forgot to start recording myself. That was your fault, Kirby, because I was waiting so long for you, but I actually forgot to press the record button. So that's who I'm blaming. I'm sure that's acceptable to blame Kirby for that one, isn't it?
I use the Reese Pardon Book of Excuses every
single
day.
Which is this one? What are you referring? Which particular excuse are you going to refer to this time?
Probably page 78, paragraph 3.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, we're just laughing at a scene in which Shura sort of buries a
rather medieval-looking
shield, two shields stuck together with a carry bag in some grass. I noticed that the Doctor and Joe get tied up, several times during this episode.
Yes, and then
Joe very bravely takes them on and grabs the machine and accidentally sends herself forward in time to meet.
Now, did you
catch?
Did you catch the two times when people are approaching the tunnel? The very first time, that the unit people are approaching the tunnel that's back in episode one, the Brigadier slips twice, and then later on, Doctor slips as he's going towards the tunnel.
I might have noticed that. If you can hear some strange coughing in the background.
Can't say I was paying that close attention.
Anyway, yes, the 20 megabyte slipping around podcast. Anyway, so Joe is very easily fooled by the controller. I like that screen, actually. I'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah, he's very easily fooled by the controller. Because she was told before she left that she wouldn't like it in the future, etc., etc. And very quickly is taken in that the controller is actually quite a nice chap.
In a society that depends on pills for nutrition,
and
it with no agriculture, he can put forth this plate of
delicious fruits. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that. If they got pills, why would they need fruits?
It's like, what the hey?
Exactly.
Where did that come from?
And, well, probably a garden of some variety. So what happens there?
Now, they made those Perspect dishes specifically for this episode.
Did they? Well, thank you for that, Kirby.
Yes.
So
Infotext.
After a typical Pertwee battle sequence in which he callously murders an Ogron, they go down the tunnel and he ends up going into the future, etc., etc., end of episode.
Yeah, that's the scene where he slips.
Is it? Oh, thank you. I won't bother looking at that one.
Oh, we missed it.
Did we? Yeah. Right, and there's a long flashback. So I must admit, on the new version, the redone sort of time vortex bits are much better, amongst other things. Basically, the main
and
special
the, and the disintegration of the of people with ray guns is better.
Yeah, it's splatter.
Although the Doctor actually killing an Ogron just is so out of character.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the Bigger on the Inside podcast, at the time they covered this episode, did actually mention that they found it quite appalling that the Doctor would be so cold-blooded in murdering the Ogron. But I suppose you could say, well, I didn't know the gun was going to do that, even though he'd worked out it was a disintegrator. At least the Brigadier shot the other one, because he could have been a double murderer, couldn't he? No? Okay, shut up then. So he very easily infiltrates his factory. I'm just sort of paraphrasing because there's a lot going on at the moment. Apart from Mr.
It was strange. It was strange. Harvey House, which is the estate which they filmed this around.
Silver bins. They're plastic bins painted silver. Why not just use proper metal ones? Anyway, sorry, Kirby.
The extras might not have been able to live with it. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They were moving around styrofoam rocks just like in that Dalek story.
Most Doctor Who stories, yes, that's right.
Yes.
Ooh, Ben Shuttle.
Invasion of Earth.
Out for the bank holiday.
Yes, Dalek Invasion of Earth. Harvey House, which is the estate that they were filming at. It was looking very... stark and futuristic, bleak. At some point since then, they tore some of the walls down from the stairwells because it looks different, although it's obviously the same building. You can see the exposed stairwells nowadays where you couldn't then.
Okay, well, that's
just odd. They also removed the ceiling from the garage.
Okay. There we go.
Oh, fascinating, like always.
Thank you, Mary, for saving me from saying it. Right then. They capture the Doctor and bit mean to him, to be honest with you.
If I lived where I could visit some of these filming locations, I would. But some people can't even go across to the mainland, 30 miles.
About this. Well, you do live fairly near one of the filming locations, actually. For the Impossible Astronaut, that was filmed somewhere in America. And also, The Angels Take Manhattan, that was filmed somewhere in America as well.
Miles.
Well, it's in your blimmin' nation, for goodness sake. You don't have to travel across a very expensive piece of water to get to it.
There's a difference between 1,000 miles and 30 miles.
Yeah, right. Anyway, right, not according to you, is it? Oh, never mind, I'm not going to go down that road. Down that road! That was quite good. Anyway, this the chap that turns up where the doctor's sort of just about to get tortured. Sorry, that's just Ben's text.
Mind analysis device, isn't it?
No, not to that bit. I haven't got to that bit. But the chap who turns up, he doesn't often look like one of either Yeager or Lightfoot. I think it's Lightfoot. Is it the same actor, or am I just sort of looking at him in a funny way? No, it's not the same actor. No. Shut up. It does look like him. Did I say flap your ears? Did I say flap your ears? No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, so he...
Which chap? Who are you talking about?
The sort of chap, the Tash, with a grey sort of
him,
smock.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks a bit like...
Jacob. What's that actor's name? Let's see.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I just think you look like Jago out of Jake Grow and Lightfoot. But he isn't. Obviously not. Oh, shut up. Moving on. So the doctor is saved by the controller, but he's not taken in by the controller's charm. And Joe is appalled by the way the doctor speaks to him. And this is where you see a knicker. So I'll sort of flash that forward. Oh, you can't see on that.
Oh, is this where she's sitting cross-legged?
Yeah, she sort of moves over and you get a flash. Hang on, let's play it in normal time. You will get a... Yes,
she
was. There we go.
Good Lord.
So if you want a time reference on that, Kirby likes his time references. It's a very quick frame. Right, you got it's 1951 again on episode 3. Okay, so if you want
I have it on the.
I thought you might have it on some sort of still frame somewhere.
On watching all the episodes at once, so that the time reference won't work.
Well, you can still use it when you watch them individually.
I'm on like 1 hour and 55 seconds. Anyway, if she's sitting cross-legged, she was objecting to that, but the what she's doing is she's emulating the controller who's sitting cross-legged, and then the doctor at one point is feasting Roman style.
Yes, okay. Anyway, back to the episode. Now, there was something I missed when I was referring to her knickers.
I think Katie flashing her knickers has become fairly standard fare.
Yeah, I suppose it is. It's obligatory. Rather like the obligatory sort of things that John Pertwee has to ride on.
Yes, oh yes.
The flat tyres.
Yeah, that was for extra grip.
Well, just less than 2 weeks before this was broadcast, Diamonds of Forever had just come out... and that had the very same model of Honda tricycles.
Oh, did it? Okay. Well, that's handy then.
They're 200 years in the future, and they happen to have
James Bond reference
a motorized
tricycle. Matthew, it was a pretty good guy.
They had problems getting Pertwee off of that because he loved it so much.
That doesn't surprise me. Anyway, so this is the first time in Doctor Who we see flashbacks of previous incarnations of the Doctor.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, he's going to look at that one. It is right, but you can carry on looking it up all you like. And this is also the bit where the title sequence sort of starts to appear on the screen. Never mind.
At the very end of episode 3, yes.
Mm. Episode 4. This he's lying down without his leg up, if I remember right. Let's have a look. Because, you know, it's a John Pertwee thing that if he laid down flat, his leg had to be up in the air. But I don't think he can. No, it is flat there.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unusual for him.
Is it before he injured his back?
No, I think he just had times in which it was hurting him more than other times. But he does sort of play the exhausted acting quite good, you know, I thought. But it doesn't last long. What?
That's Kirby being exhausted.
He was being exhausted.
yeah, so eventually it turns out that... very quickly.
I am exhausted. It's 5:41 in the morning.
Be quiet.
And we have a long day ahead of us.
They're in a paradox, basically. That they've actually gone back and caused the explosion themselves, which is, I thought, quite a good little twist in the story.
No, we saw the first Doctor and the second Doctor, so it was three docs, not a paradox.
It's not funny. Don't laugh. I've had that joke about 50 times.
It's
got green hair, though. So they eventually go back to normal time and have to try and stop Shaw, is it, from blowing up the house, just as everybody mm-hmm. arrives back from the conference abroad, and then they have a...
Are they having the conference there?
The house. All right, well, he's gone away to gather some friends to have a conference in his house.
That's better.
Thank you. Delegation. There you go. And so... thought it was quite amusing, actually, that the scene in which they're trying to get Styles to actually leave the house, and the Brigadier sort of uses his limited authority to actually get him to leave, and then I think it's Yates said, "Please leave," or words to that effect. And the Doctor is let go by, this is obviously before that, the Doctor let go by a strange silver man who ends up getting killed by the Daleks. Because he turns good in the end.
The Daleks are pretty stupid about this, because they're all entering from the back.
That's when they're really...
the Daleks are leaving out the front.
Yeah, but that's when they're really enthusiastic, when they exterminate him. Exterminate.
All three Daleks and all six Ogrons.
And it's funny how when they die, they just stand in the air with their arms up in the air for a bit before they fall on the ground.
I have to admit that the new version, the special edition, has a lot better scenes with where they've digitally duplicated Daleks and Ogrons to make it look a little better,
a little more invasive.
Yes.
And it has a very abrupt end, really, because once the house blows up.
That's it.
And that's it. They sort of Doctor has a quick chat with his originals, and that's it. So there we go. I suppose I'd better start. The important thing for me about this particular story is not the fact of whether it's good or not. It's one of the earliest Doctor Who stories I know I watched, because the fact that there weren't.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Yeah,
there weren't any any Dalek stories. It was the first one since Power of the Daleks. So I can remember being at primary school for some reason at my primary school, which is Holy Cross Primary School, anybody who went there, their infant class at the time was upstairs. So they had the little ones had to climb upstairs, and they had their playground up on a sort of like a plateau thing, which I thought, looking back, was probably not very safe. But anyway, I remember going around that playground pretending to be a Dalek. So there's no way I would have remembered Power of the Daleks. So therefore, it would have been because this story had been on. So it would probably have been 1971 or 1972.
It was 1972. This was broadcast on January 1st.
Well, I can tell you, you won't find this very interesting, but Holy Cross Primary School, the reason I was sent there is because it was a Roman Catholic primary school, and I am a Protestant, so I was sent there because they were the only primary school in the Isle of Wight that took children in before the normal school starting age at that time. So I was there in the infant class for 2 years. Therefore, this was on when I was in my second year of being in the infant class. So I know.
Did you have to stay on the same table?
I remember my first day when I went in there and I didn't have a chair, and the only chair I could find, this great big chair behind this desk, so I nicked that one, and the teacher said, "It's my chair. Can't have that one." Mrs. Finnegan, my first ever teacher.
English, anyway,
this was one of the first times.
Hang on, I haven't finished my review.
You reminded me of something.
Oh, go on then.
This was... As I said, this was broadcast, the first episode, on January 1st, 1972. The BBC was considering moving the show from Saturdays to Thursdays, and it was originally announced to be on, the 5th or 6th of January, that Thursday. And there was a friend on the 6th floor of Television Center who liked Daleks. His name was Hugh something. And
Hugh something? He was a strange name.
Yeah, I didn't get his last name. Anyway, he was responsible for getting it moved back to getting it to stay on Saturdays. So that was one of the very first times they tried to shake things up.
Ah, but they didn't.
Right.
Good. Okay, so I think this was okay. There you go, that's my review of the thing. I don't really like going back to watch this one. I think it might be because I've watched it so many times. I don't like the Daleks. Although I will say, when I watched it with the new redo done, the special effects, it was more enjoyable for me. Because the Daleks weren't very menacing with the voices they had in the original. But Ian Briggs does. Nicholas Briggs. What's that Ian for? Nicholas Ian. Briggs does the
yeah, what'd you say Ian for?
Because I made a mistake. Anyway, but no, it's medium to okay, this particular story. I'm going to go with Mary now. Mary?
Oh, I don't know if you want to go with me now.
Why?
Because, sorry, I used to be so dull. that I, as you know, I like to break up the episodes and watch each one alone. And each time I would go back to watch it, the next episode, I would find myself saying, okay, what is this story? What is it about? I don't remember anything from the previous episode. And I would find my mind drifting during each episode. Because, it just has all the, you know, all the same elements that we are so used to. I mean, it's kind of like somebody said, okay, we want to do the most generic Doctor Who story we can possibly come up with. Because UNIT is going to do things the way UNIT does them. Pertwee is going to find ways to do his Venusian Aikido yeah. and run around on some motorized yeah. vehicle of some sort, however inappropriate. you know, Katie is going to stand around, you know, and be, ooh, ooh, doctor, you know, and flash her knickers. And the Daleks, we have to have Daleks. So let's just throw them in the story, even though they don't really do anything. And we need another monster, an ugly monster. Okay, we'll put these monsters on, but we're going to make them really stupid and ineffectual. It's just like, it was just so tedious. And so many things that don't make sense. Such as
we found and destroyed the enemy.
Did you, Kirby? Well, let's go on with Mary's.
They know the world. They know that the next world war starts with the peace conference blowing up, so that all the delegates die. So let's go into the past and stop it. And let's take some explosive with us, so that we can prevent it somehow. I don't know. Just from the get-go, it just nothing really made sense. UNIT searching the house for the doctor and saying, oh, no, you know, we've searched the house. Well, they never once looked in the basement where both the doctor and Joe were tied up and held at gunpoint. You know, there were just so many things that made no sense to me. So I would put this way even below Twin Dilemma as something.
No!
I could only make myself watch it once.
Okay.
And below the gunfighters too, which I really, really didn't like.
No, I don't know that one either. Right then, Kirby.
Okay, I'm going to be completely opposite. I love this story. I believe this is the fourth time I've watched it. Last night was the fourth time I'd watched it. And like I said, that was the first time I watched the original version as opposed to the special version. But I loved it. It was a nice little, tied in on itself, time travel tale. It was one of the very first times they'd done that sort of thing, which you don't get a lot of that until the Stephen Moffat era, where you've got events
where
in the
things
past.
Don't make sense.
where the future and the past are all tied together, where they're affecting each other. Like that, and it was to me. It was just a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed this one, and I will watch it again in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah, okay, we can do that in a minute then, Debbie.
Well, having you say watch this one, let's have a look. It's the first one that I've gone back to in a very long time, mm-hmm. and I was actually pretty much I found that it tied itself up beautifully. I did sort of find my mind wandering off every now and then, especially when
Thank you, Debbie.
But I was coming back to it, having not really watched much of Pertwee, and seeing him kill the Ogron. Mm. That I found that quite shocking to go back and see that the Doctor just quite casually just went, yeah. "There you go, yeah. He's gone. I know what this weapon can do." When in the later stories, it's all about don't kill, no kill. Mm. People live, don't kill.
Although he's a warrior.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
People,
yes,
but
exactly. But
it's a bit, you know, he did it too flippantly, didn't he? Mm. He just sort of.
And it was not.
He kills entire civilizations.
Exactly.
Not
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's not supportive about one and manipulates others.
Other
yes.
It, yeah. Yeah, so.
But it was nice to see UNIT working as well.
Yeah.
It's nice. You don't see so much of that later on. Mm. It's nice to see sort of them all yawning and staying up late and the coffee not being ready and things like that. It was kind of nice bringing the humanity of that side.
Yeah, and Yates pulling rank on.
Yeah, exactly. Just the little asides and things like that. But I found it was nice to see the Daleks. The Daleks will forever
razor hairs on my arm because
this
they
is
are
for
so
me
frightening.
The most the story in which they were the least scary.
Really. I like you said with the voices, I found I found them. Yeah, it didn't immediately.
They were just silly. I think. Well, I don't remember being scared of them when I was 6 years old. I was already 5 years old, I think, when I watched it.
Well, they didn't do anything in this story.
No, not really. No,
went backwards and forwards and bleated. That's what they sounded like. They sounded like sheep.
Yeah, and it didn't really highlight the fact how absolutely dangerous they are. They sort of just hung about in the background a bit. Yeah. And,
well, the original version of this story didn't have Daleks in it.
Right.
They just thought that they should pop them in.
Yeah, so they just threw them in there. Yeah.
They threw them in there. Although there's stories that they'll tell where they had been filming this for a while and then realized they had to ask permission of Terry Nation to use them. That is incorrect. They actually asked permission of him the previous summer, way before they started filming.
Okay.
So there's records.
I mean, looking
that.
Also the fact that this was set 200 years into the future was around the time in which Dalek invasion of Earth was. So I think there was a slight tie-in to that, but not anything major. And I can't remember that this was like set before they decided to turn the Earth into a spaceship, but around the same time.
Yeah, it's set during that 100 years or so they were doing stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was okay for me. That was good. But there you go. That was our review of Day of the Daleks. Thanks, Kirby, for picking that one.
Was Debbie done?
Yeah, you're
pretty
sorry,
much,
you're done.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah,
I do apologise. Yes,
pretty
much, drifted again. That doesn't happen very often, does it? It's now time to welcome new members to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. Apparently last week I forgot to welcome Tommy Dean Coppleston. I did welcome Debbie Melrose, whoever she is. And then we have Jason Hodgson, Greg Jones, Simon Montgomery, John Wesley Collins. I'm glad these people are sticking to my rules of having pronounceable names. Mr. Treacle Treacle. Daniel Copeland and Steve Andrew.
That was sweet of you.
Thank you very much. So there we are. That was a welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. You fools.
Now, why aren't people writing in?
They are. They do write to Ian. And then he writes back to us.
Oh.
Anyway, I've got some audio feedback. Don't sound too excited. Right, the audio feedback begins with Mr. Billy Kirkbright, who says this eventually when it starts playing.
Hi, everybody. This is Billy Kirkbright in Australia with just a few thoughts regarding that wonderful story, Day of the Daleks.
Sarcasm.
For me, this is, I wouldn't say a favourite, because I think for any Doctor Who fan, it's hard to pick a favourite, but certainly the Day of the Daleks certainly is up there and has an extremely special place in my heart.
Oh dear, we just slagged off.
Because it was my first ever Doctor Who experience.
Ah.
I remember
like you, Adam.
6 being absolutely mesmerised by Doctor Who, or by the story, rather. I think for two reasons. One is because of John Pertwee's portrayal of the Doctor. He's often been mentioned as a typical man of action, a James Bond-style
really
character. And this was very much the case when, I think, in one particular scene where he was in Sir Reginald Stiles' house and the gorilla came to attack him, and he was drinking wine, and he just very calmly, very suavely, hung onto the wine glass while dealing with the gorilla in martial arts style. It wasn't fair, he just took it in his stride and just, you know, overcame the gorilla, and, you know, very suave, very calm and sophisticated, and I've always loved that scene, you know. And another scene where there was a chase where the Doctor and Joe Grant was on a three-wheeler motorised bike, and they were being chased. You know, this something very, like, which has often been said, something very James Bond about John Pertwee's Doctor. And I think it was because
forever
of him.
Apparently so.
Is why I became quite a big Doctor Who fan, to be honest. And I was very sad when he left, but as you do, you get over it and carry on. But I guess another reason why I loved the Day of the Daleks was because of the Ogrons.
Ogrons.
I found these villains very
Australian
scary.
Pronunciation.
Very
it's Australian.
Despite their lack of IQ. I've always thought it's been quite a disappointment that they've never really reached, well, they haven't returned to the show since the Pertwee era. And I found this a massive disappointment, because how menacing and how frightening can they look now with their special effects and budgets? I think they make a valuable asset to the to the Doctor Who universe, you know. So yeah, there you go. But I think it would also be remiss of me not to mention Joe Grant's red knickers. I won't elaborate on that.
Highlight.
I didn't really notice back then when I was 6 years old.
Refer to the earlier time reference.
I didn't notice that at all. It came to light more in recent years. I wasn't that observant back then. Okay, but Day of the Daleks, what a fantastic story. In fact, I remember when I was watching this particular episode on TV on Saturday night, as of course, the family were about to, on the same night, was taking me and my siblings out to see Beatrix Potter at the local cinema. And we had to actually get to the cinema at a particular time, which meant we had to leave the house before Doctor Who finished, which meant I didn't get to see the whole episode. I was extremely disappointed, extremely grumpy, extremely naughty, and I played up. Why? Because I didn't get to see Doctor Who.
I hated it when parents did that.
In its entirety that night.
Indeed.
How sad. But anyway, I digress. Doctor Who, or I beg your pardon, Day of the Daleks, what a fantastic story. All the best.
Yes, thank you, Billy. I will just comment that it's not the first Doctor Who I saw. It's just the first I can remember, because I've been watching Doctor Who in the 60s. Hence the fact I recognised Patrick Troughton when he was in The Three Doctors. I did relate to this story earlier.
Mm.
Yeah, what's the other thing you referred to?
Knickers.
No, it wasn't Knickers. Something else, never mind. But yeah, thanks, Billy. And we got this.
James Vine.
I do hope we can hear this. It's from Andy. I don't think I did a play, not to download.
Oh, no.
Here we go. Oh, yes.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. 20 Megabyters, and a happy Easter one and all. It's 4:19 in the afternoon. Sitting with the laptop at the moment, my desktop seems to have died, so I'm going to get sorted out. I had a rather frustrating afternoon. I went down to the Oval, hoping to catch some of the first cricket of the year. Sat for a couple of hours.
You don't snore at cricket, be quiet.
And gave up and came
right.
Home again and again. Sorry. Anyway, I'm sitting here in the lounge with a glass of Pear Tree white wine, which is not one I've had before, so we'll have a sip of that. And
that's not what the doctor was drinking.
It was quite refreshing, that. It's quite fruit. It's got definitely fruit taste. Bit of cinnamon, I think, there as well. But yes, it's that's rather a nice one. I thoroughly recommend
drunk
that. Anyway, I've just finished watching the end of Day of the Daleks. I've been watching it over about 3 days. I've got the Omni Edition, I think. I must have got this off copies of VHS. And this one, unlike last week, did actually copy. And it's just a very good story, isn't it? The storyline is...
Yes.
It's a known storyline, you know, someone goes back in past to change history and actually becomes part of history. So you've actually got a web of time thing there. The people themselves are now part of it and have caused it. So, fairly straightforward to understand, but the question's now going to be, okay, so if that guy blew the house up and the war didn't start, does that mean then he wouldn't have been born, therefore he wouldn't have been able to go back in time to stop the house... below the house to stop the war? And you get the gist, don't you? It's sort of it's a continual loop. Or has he somehow put it back onto the normal timeline? Because obviously, you know, the Doctor would have known that, you know, Earth wasn't invaded in the 22nd century. It might be, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be around the 22nd century to find out, will I? Don't, any of us will be, probably.
Pessimist.
But it's one of those cause and effect things. So what's the cause, what's the effect, and how do you actually keep that continuity going? Is there a disparity somewhere where you're actually breaking a link? It sounds rather technical, doesn't it? But I think you understand what I mean. But anyway, the story itself is a very well-scripted story, I think. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Classic line in there, Benton, go lay on a jeep for me. For the beginning here. Also, you had some good characters in there as well. I mean, Reginald Stiles was perhaps the typical blimpish politician. But if you think when this would have been written in, what, the early 70s, off the Cold War, was probably not quite at its peak then. But I can... I was going to have eight at the time, I think a little bit older than you, Adam. But certainly I was aware of the Cold War at that time, and there were times when you did wonder, you know, what is the world going to hell in a handcart or something like that? So I think it's very current and it's very relevant to what it was at the time. And I think with what's going on now with Russia and the Ukraine, and you know, also possibly, you know, with the, what's going on with, shall we say, the Muslim world, and leave it at that. I don't want to offend anybody there, but I think we all understand what I'm driving at there. I'm doing hand gestures again. So I think it's got a very great relevance to the political situation we're in now. Now, the story itself, John Pertwee was in total command of the story. I mean, he's my favourite doctor, and he really does run the show and rule it. And the way he gets the gorillas to come round to his way of thinking and explains, you know, about the loop of time thing, when he stops them from shooting the controller lets him go, you know, obviously realising that really he's signing his own death warrant there. But, you know, in a way, bravery of a different kind, a man who, by his own action, you know, knew he could make a difference. The guy replaced him, that's kind of a campus uniform I've ever seen in Doctor Who. It looked like something out of some sort of 1980s gay disco. No, I never went to gay disco. Allegedly, you know. Anyway, moving swiftly on again as well. Brigadier as well, I thought at the end when he's clearing out the conference, he was actually superb, you know, he really is. I know when he actually left with Stuart, not left with Nicholson, when he actually joined the military, I think he made a corporal, he wasn't. But he knew how to be a soldier. So there's some interesting little cameos in there. If you notice towards the end when Joe and the doctor rush into the house, Joe rushes in first, and as the doctor goes past, they all stand to attention, and they completely ignore Joe. Also, how on earth did the Daleks get from the railway tunnel to the house, you know, across the riverbank and up a hill and things like that, you know, it's...
It's also 17 miles away.
And the Ogrons, I think Ogrons are very, very sinister because they're just menace and that's all it is. Mm. They've also got no personality. They're just totally single-minded and they don't seem to mind being shot. And again, the unit troops do these bloody awful shots at them. And you thought, you know, a couple of rounds from a 9mm machine gun would take the whole lot of men. But didn't seem so. Also, quite a high death rate when you look at the bodies that are lying around the house. At the end, this was quite a bloody and gory episode indeed, wasn't it? But it's a clever story in the fact that it uses time to make you try and think about, you know, have you got that cause and effect? You know, could you go back and kill your own granddad? What happened there as well? Doesn't explain, it doesn't need to, because it makes you think about that. You know, as I said a few minutes ago, it's what's the cause and effect here? So from that point of view, a very, very cleverly written story. Now, also, this story had the TV reporter, Alex McIntosh. Now, which is the first instance of a real person appearing in that. I'd never heard of him. I just had to look him up on the Tardis Wiki. But he was a TV reporter, so it's the real world coming in. In a way, you're almost breaking the fourth wall. Presumably, at the time, people have known who this guy was, this TV reporter.
Former friend of the show.
I'm not sure that's actually happened. Oh, Kenneth Kendall did.
Oh, there you go.
Kenneth Kendall play himself, possibly.
He did.
It's not often you get that show. Wall being broken. I know it's been done more with RTD and Moffat. There's also one point you notice that when the Doctor and Joe come back from the 22nd century and they climb down into the tunnels, the Doctor goes first, and of course Joe's going to go after him, so he's got a lovely view as he looks straight at me.
That's quite a lot of mentions.
Yes, they're powerful lectures, aren't they, doctors, at times? However, all in all, you can see why Day of the Daleks, I mean, he brought the Daleks back after 5 years, which is a long time, and certainly helped to re-establish one. You can see why John Pertwee and Katie Manning both really enjoyed it, saying one of the favourites, and why it is, I think it is one of the classic stories. It's tightly written, it's well-scripted, well-filmed, and, yeah, very good one. Anyway, time to log off now. The lovely Dawn's having a bath. She's got a bad back at the moment. She's going to have dinner at some point in time, and fortunately, don't have to go to work tomorrow. So, be seeing you.
Thank you, Andy. It's a shame we didn't get here from the lovely Dawn.
That reminded me, this is... we had the first redefinition of Dalekanium with this story. Suddenly, Dalekanium is an explosive rather than the casing material of a Dalek.
Indeed. But we have some audio feedback from a very regular contributor.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. Day of the Daleks by Lewis Marks. I watched the special edition. They say those time-travelling soldiers look like gorillas. I think the Ogrons look like gorillas.
Yes,
in the face without flinching. Her eyesight is so bad she doesn't know what she's looking at. Sure, I caused the explosion that the guerrillas went back in time to prevent. People think that time is linear, but it is a big ball of Moffat. A pompous politician appears again in the Doctor Who story. Joe Grant's underwear appears again. The controller turns out not to be all bad in the end. Bye for now.
That's strange, isn't it? Thank you, Ian. They've all gone very quiet. And we have this, so you might want to go make yourself a cup of tea, because there's the last bit of audio feedback for this week. And I won't be singing.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. And sorry I once again can't join you this week. But
very quiet,
isn't it? I want to go ahead and send in some thoughts on Day of the Daleks, nevertheless. When I first discovered back in 2007 that one of my local public libraries had a massive collection of the show on VHS, this was the very first story I checked out and watched. I was already becoming a big fan of the Daleks. I'd heard about the story on the Dalek Tapes documentary, which is on the Genesis of the Daleks DVD. It was the third Doctor Unit story, and I'm already even then a big fan of that era. So for me, it had a lot of things going for it. I was really excited to see it, and I have to confess, I was just a bit disappointed by it. I think that the big problem the story has, rather ironically, is the simple fact it's a Dalek story.
Louis I Martin can't understand this. Can anybody else?
I can understand it. Can you understand it, Danny?
Can hear
it. Yeah, yeah. Bad luck!
Very less interesting. You know, let's
Adam's gone cyber on
story. Oh,
and I think that fact shows, because if you look at the story, for the first three episodes of it, the Daleks do virtually nothing. They sit in the room, they issue orders, and that's it. When they do finally get to move out of the room in episode four, the results are really less than spectacular. You know, there's a reason that final battle sequence was and, well, still is ridiculed by everybody from fans to John Pertwee in convention appearances. And for an example of that, there's a thing, I think, from the Panopticon, 1993 Panopticon convention that's on the original DVD release of The Three Doctors, where him and Katie Manning talk about the story, making fun of the fact, you know, it was a battle sequence with three Daleks. And I think that something that exacerbates that problem is the Dalek voices in this, which, frankly, they're quite possibly the worst Dalek voices of the entire original series of the show. They're not Dalek voices at all. They're flat, monotone, unemotional robot voices. And I think it doesn't help and doesn't give anything to the Daleks. And it's one of the reasons why I'm grateful there's a special edition version of this story where Nicholas Briggs, who has, of course, been doing the voices not just for the new series, but on Big Finish for years and years and years now, and yes, I just made my obligatory Big Finish reference for the episode, and it's something I think that really improves the story. Because I think really the problems this story has are cosmetic ones. And I think it's something that having a special edition version of this story really illustrates. Because I think Louis Marx's script, I think, is actually quite good. And, you know, the way he deals with the issues of the time travel paradoxes is quite interesting. And especially when you consider that, you know, Doctor Who wasn't going to be doing that kind of thing until really in the Davies era, but really into the Moffat era. So it's a story that, in some ways, is ahead of its time. The fact that the world's on the brink of World War III, and the implication, I think, from the story is that it's the Soviets and the Chinese who are potentially going to have a war is quite interesting, and it's something that we don't tend to remember a lot today, which is that throughout sort of the mid-late 60s into the early 70s, the Russians and the Chinese had a continuing series of border skirmishes, which could have potentially led to a conflict between the two of them. It's something that's portrayed in films like The Omega Man with Charlton Heston, which was released a year before. And, of course, it's also the main reason why Nixon wanted to go to China. And, of course, Nixon going to China happens just a few months after this story was broadcast. So it's something that is very interesting looking back on things. I think that the story has some interesting echoes of the Dalek invasion of Earth. It's a, you know, the Daleks have conquered Earth in the 22nd century. There's slave labor. There's, you know, collaboration going on. So I don't think it quite has the depth of that story, but it does other things as well, particularly with a sort of a different take on the whole Freedom Fighters thing, which of course allows the whole time travel paradox to come into it. I think the one shame of the story is that it ends rather abruptly, and that because it was simply never filmed, the scene that was supposed to end this story, which is in the novelization where the Third Doctor and Joe go back to Unit HQ, and of course we see the scene we saw at the beginning of the story, from their point of view, was simply never filmed, so we can't put that back into the special edition. So, it, but I think even without that, I think that Day of the Daleks is one of the better scripts from the Pertwee era. And I think the special edition version fixes a lot of the cosmetic issues. The new special effects in it are lovely, and even some of the new material where they've gone out and filmed a couple of new things. It really, I think, works rather well, and I would highly recommend for anybody to check out that special edition version. Because I think that it really shows that this is a sort of an underrated story from the Pertwee era, and a story I think that needs to kind of go back and be reexamined. So I'll be very curious to see what you guys had to say about the story. So I hope to join you next week when we'll be talking about The State of Decay, which I'm really looking forward to. So until then.
So long and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah, that was Matthew Kressel, as if we really needed to guess. Well,
for someone who only just a couple hours ago discovered he couldn't join us, he sure was prepared with that so long and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah, and also, for someone who does his own podcast, he wasn't particularly prepared with his audio quality either. But thanks anyway, Matthew. Keep it coming.
I'm surprised, though, that you, Adam, didn't bring up the old Vulcan... old Vulcan proverb, as he alluded to it. Only Nixon could go to China.
God. Right. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
If Nixon had not gone to China, I wouldn't have my daughters. But so there.
There we go. That's a good enough reason, is it not?
I was able to go to China 3 times for my daughters.
That's good. Going to get another one?
No.
Well, I had to ask. Anyway, right, it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. And
Debbie will win.
Why?
Oh, she's closed down.
I've closed down. I've shut down.
You want me to show a picture of her closed down eye blooming pad? Just to prove. Yeah, closed down iPad. Yeah, I'll post it on the Facebook group.
Yeah, we can't be sure she's not looking at your answers.
Not at all.
How could you?
Got a face.
They're just trying to cover themselves to try their inadequacies in the answering questions about the.
Well, since we don't have Matthew to win.
First question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Right. What is the name of Sir Reginald Stiles' assistant?
Ah.
No, it's not R, and it doesn't even start with an R.
Paget. Miss Paget.
Yes, it is. Well done. Mary.
Yes?
What is
it? It wasn't until watching it last night I realized that the Brigadier had made reference to her in that first telephone conversation.
Okay. Mary.
Yes?
What is the government-owned country house used by Sir Reginald Stiles?
Like, what is its name?
Yes.
Okay.
Fred.
I think it's pronounced with Otterly.
Otterly, yes. Right. Okay. Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
What did the doctor say the futuristic gun that was discovered was?
Oh, good Lord.
No, wasn't that
a disintegrator ray?
I'll give you one point. For disintegrator. Anybody like to come up with the other word?
Yes, it's an ultrasonic disintegrator.
Kirby.
Master.
What cheese does the doctor seem to enjoy quite a lot?
Gorgonzola.
Correct. Mary.
Yes?
I had some last night.
Congratulations.
I was watching this.
Mary, what does RHIP stand for?
What does what stand for?
RHIP.
I know.
I don't know.
Go on, Kirby.
Rank has its privileges.
Correct.
Yeah.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is the name of the female mercenary?
I think I know.
No, pass.
Mary.
Is it Petra?
No. It's Anat.
I know.
Too late. Right.
No, I knew.
I'm sorry. Only one other child. You should have jumped in.
I had Anne in my head.
Well, whose go is that? So it's McKirby's go now, isn't it?
Master.
How many men did Benton report missing?
I don't remember precisely. Let me say four.
No. Anybody? Don't all shout at once. Didn't get that one. It's two. You had a guest, for goodness sake. Right then, Mary.
I did guess.
Yeah, guessed. Yeah, you did, but nobody else did. No. Right, Mary.
Yeah.
What is Shora's radio code to Eagle?
Greyhound one?
Nope, that's the unit one. Anybody?
No.
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 ZV, or as you called it, Z, but it was Z in the script. ZV6. Debbie.
Yeah, see, we would have missed it because it's Z, not
yeah,
Z.
Right, yeah. What reason does the Doctor give to Joe as to why they cannot go back to September the 12th?
Whose question is this?
Debbie's why? Question.
Oh, I knew I was going to be rubbish at these.
You'll kick yourself.
Yes, of course
you and me both.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kirby, Mary?
It's easy. It's easy.
Yeah, I'm going to kick myself first.
It's the Blinovich limitation effect.
Oh, for goodness
Blinovich
sake, and I showed you that earlier.
keep what you showed me earlier to yourself.
Oh, okay.
All right, then. After that, those rounds of questions, the current scores are in last place with 1 point, Debbie.
Yep,
in second
go.
Place with 2 points, Mary. And in the first place with 7 points, Kirby, who reckoned that Debbie was going to win. And only to cover him. He's back. Right then, Kirby, this is your question.
Master.
What mode of transport does the Brigadier elect to use to get back to Orderly House?
A jeep?
It is. Mary.
Okay, that was just a guess.
How far is Orderly House away from London?
Oh, I think I know that one.
12 miles.
Nope, Debbie.
50.
Correct.
Hey.
Libby,
oh.
Who was the first to kill an Ogron?
Whose question?
First Libby. To kill an Ogron. Was it the Doctor?
It was.
Yep.
Kirby.
Master.
What sneaky thing do Boaz and Anat do while the Doctor is at the Factory City thingy?
The car park.
I don't know.
There? That's not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Anybody?
Nope.
No.
Do you have a cigarette?
No, it was a cigar. No.
Don't be so blimmin' pedantic. Well, I pointed out to the pedantry.
No, they did that deliberately because they were showing it was in the info text.
You didn't get
they
that.
Were showing
I would have given. I would have accepted cigar as an answer.
They were doing the old Castro Che Guevara thing. And that they were trying to deliberately evoke that sort of feeling. And that was why it was a cigar.
Whose question was that? Was that yours, Kirby?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Therefore, this is Mary's question.
It's highly unlikely something as wasteful as cigar making probably doesn't happen.
Right. Mary. And also, they didn't work out that 200 years in the future, nobody would be smoking.
True.
Hmm. Right. What do the Daleks use to find out the identity of the Doctor?
The mind probe.
No.
I'm not
even,
not the
I'm
mind
not going to even give you a point. That one. Anybody?
No.
No.
Useless.
Mind it's control?
No, the mind analysis machine. Right, Debbie.
She used the word mind.
I'll give her a point for mind, even though it was a flippant answer. Right, Debbie, how do the mercenaries plan to get into the Factory City?
Oh... Nope.
Anybody?
The skies?
Through the tunnels.
Through the
explosives?
No, it's through the disused underground railway, which again was a reference. It's a tunnel.
It's a tunnel.
Not quite. No, you're not getting any points for that one. All right, Kirby.
Master?
How many generations has the controller's family been in charge of that part of the factory?
Many. I don't know.
I haven't even written the answer down. That's all I can remember, isn't it? Go on then, Debbie.
Was it three?
It was. Right. Kirby. I mean, Mary, sorry. easy to make a mistake there. Mary, at what airport were Stiles and his delegation due to arrive at 1800 hours? Sorry, I'll say that again because I confused myself. Shut up, Magic. At what airport were Stiles and his delegation due to arrive at 1800 hours?
Heathrow?
No. Nope. Anybody?
Gatwick?
No.
Nope.
No. Stansted?
RAF Manston. Right. Kirby.
They were all pretty rubbish.
Yep.
Yes. Which of the mercenaries was left injured in the 20th century time zone?
Oh, I can't remember his name. Shurash?
That'll do. Yeah. Near enough. Right, and after those questions, there's not many left. Currently in last place, Mary with 3 points. In second place with 7 points, Debbie. And in the lead with 9 points, Kirby. Right. Kirby.
Master.
What was the name of the TV reporter standing outside Orderly House?
Alex something.
Try again.
Alex something.
I'll give you a point for Alex.
That's all I remember.
I'd really like to get the other point.
He was a real reporter.
Yes, I know he knew this. So anybody like to get the other part of his name?
Nope.
It was Macintosh. Right, Mary.
Yeah.
I love this question. This is my favourite question of all time in regards to this particular quiz.
What colour are Joe's knickers?
I should have done that one.
Yeah.
I'll give you a point if you can tell me what colour. No, I won't. Right then, the question is, and I love this question, what make of car did Reginald Stiles arrive at the house in?
Oh, I haven't any idea.
I'm going to have a guess. There's a few makes of car that are quite posh.
Citroen?
posh?
Citroen is fairly posh.
Okay, if you say so. No, it's not a Citroen. Anybody?
Wasn't it Rolls, was it?
No.
I saw a Mercedes in there.
No, the Bentley. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What is the only material effective against the Daleks and the composition of the bomb?
Oh, for goodness sake. Remembering the name of it.
I mentioned it a minute.
Yes,
ago.
I know.
He likes to say stuff like that.
I know.
One day he'll do that and it'll be the wrong answer.
I can't remember the full name of it.
Go on in, Kirby.
Dalekanium.
That's
correct.
It.
Well, there's one question left and it's on a free-for-all, so whoever gets in first gets to get the points for this one, and it's who composed the incidental music for Day of the Daleks? I hear birds tweeting.
I would guess it was Dudley Simpson.
You would guess correctly. Therefore, the final scores are: in last place with 3 points is Mary, in second place with 7 points, and a very respectable 7 points is Debbie. And yes. The winner, surprise, surprise, this week after saying that Debbie would win, it's Kirby with 13.
Would have lost if we'd had Matthew.
Probably. I think I better do some news. I've lost my mouse. There it is.
You've lost your mouse?
Yeah.
Need a cat?
Shut up. Not you, talk to the dog.
Found the mouse.
Monday the 14th. That's sort of a week ago, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, our friend of the show is on that one. Farewell to Matt Smith. That was one of the last things. Temporal logbook. Stories wanted for charity, Doctor Who, anthology. No, anthology. Does that say anthology?
Anthology.
Shut up! Sorry, the dogs keep being noisy.
Okay.
short stories are being sought after. I can't read that because the screen's too far away from me. My glasses are inadequate for this particular distance. It's just that midway between needing and not needing my glasses. Short stories are being sought for an unofficial Doctor Who anthology that will raise money for charity. The Vancouver-based outfit Pencil Tip Publishing is bringing out the Temporal Logbook featuring original Doctor Who fiction by new and upcoming writers. I wonder if the BBC's happy with this. Mm. Anyway, that's enough of that. DWA offers Easter egg excitement, apparently. That's a Doctor Who adventure shows readers how to make monster eggs for Easter. Examples include a Zygon, Weeping Angel, Dalek, Slitheen, and Mr. Sweet.
The Slitheen one.
Better get started now.
Well, it's still Easter Monday, isn't it? And Stepson Gig plus DVD double bill with Moths announced. Oh, good. We talked about that the other week. Actor, writer, and comedian Toby Haydoke is to give the last performance of My Stepson Stole My Sonic Screwdriver for the foreseeable future next month, he has announced. We should get him on the show to speak about this, as he's the patron of the 20 Minute Bike podcast.
Because I've got the recording of his
The BBC production is fantastic, yes. But I did ask him last one of the last times he was on the show about a video of Moths. Anyway, it says...
Hello, my name's Toby Haydoke, which will probably excite and annoy in equal measure. You're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Continue so to do.
The show, which is as highly acclaimed as its antecedent...
Antecedent.
Thank you, Mary. Moss ate my... Why does he have to use these stupid words? Moss ate my Doctor Who scarf will be staged on Monday the 19th of May at 7.30 at Bollington Arts Centre, Wellington Road, Bollington, Cheshire, as part of Bollington Festival. I'm just seeing if it says anything about any releases on it. I'm not going to read the rest of it. It says... Oh, it does, actually. No, I'll shut up. I'll carry on reading and do some editing. Haydoke, who writes for Doctor Who magazine and has been a moderator on classic Doctor Who DVDs, also said that work is underway on a DVD release of Moths and Stepson, both of which were filmed.
Should you two shut up?
Sorry.
Performed them as a double bill at the Garrick Theatre in the West End on the 17th of November last year. A release date is yet to be announced, but look forward to that. Might have to text in to see if we can get a heads up on when those are actually coming out. Or maybe get him on the show to do a sort of promotion. That'd be an excuse. No, he's got his own podcast, but you never know, he might come back on the show.
He doesn't need us.
What else we got here? There's a video of something. It says Horror Channel, Who on Horror, full spring schedule. Apparently the Horror Channel are doing...
Yes, they started them from the first ever episode last on Friday, Good Friday, what the Horror Channel are doing more.
What, you didn't know about that, Adam?
No, I didn't.
After all, Tom Baker has been promoting that quite a bit.
Yes, I have been busy, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Doctor Who Celebration, the regeneration...
Yeah, Tom Baker was saying that he wished that the BBC could be blown up.
Did he? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, never mind then. Doctor Who Celebration, regenerations panel full video. The good thing about this is, it's the one I went to. So, because obviously you're the one...
So can we see you in the audience?
Well, no. But I did actually provide an audio of this on the 20 Megabyte podcast sometime in November. So if you go back and drag through the previous editions of the podcast, you'll find... Talk about previous editions of the podcast. I didn't mention Kenneth Kendall, former friend of the show. So if you want to do what the interview with Kenneth Kendall was on episode 65, I believe. Yeah,
look
back
at this picture, and I wonder, where's Paul McGann?
He wasn't at it.
Apparently.
Hey? Does it say he was?
No, I just wondered why.
Oh, I don't know, he wasn't invited, but he wasn't actually at the event at all. There's a video link on DoctorWhoNews.net, which essentially gives you the video of what you can hear on the 20 Megabyte podcast episode. Which that was on. Right, classic DVDs compendium to be published, a guide to the DVD release of the original run of Doctor Who is to be published, another guide, mm-hmm. I should say, by Wonderful Books. The classic Doctor Who DVD compendium by Paul Smith is out in the summer. I'd rather have a compendium of the broadcast episodes that lists DVDs and release and stuff like that, rather like you get on the highly accurate Wikipedia. 2014 Hugo nominations. Doctor Who dominates.
I believe that Doctor Who will probably win a Hugo.
Yeah, Doctor Who dominates the nominations for Best Dramatic Presentation Short Film Programme in the 2014 Hugo Awards. Oi, I'm knocking my table. Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, was that you?
No.
And maybe we'll see in the Five-ish Doctors reboot, we saw Stephen Moffat's Hugo sitting on a shelf kind of behind him. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we'll see another one.
I'll tell you later what, it would be quite funny if Russell T. Davis's boyfriend was called Hugo, because then at least he could say he's got a Hugo sitting somewhere in his.
I'm hoping that the Five Inch Doctors reboot wins, because I love that.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Doctor Who newsreel among thousands of films released by British Pathé. Archive footage relating to Doctor Who is among thousands of films now available to view on the British Pathé YouTube channel, which is a... Yes, I've had a look at some of the stuff on there. It's really, really good. In fact, there's
you notice one of those was the one that I posted. I posted that the day these things came out. I did a quick scan for doctors. I didn't find some of these. Like, I noticed
we've got a doctor
at the
health
center,
haven't we? So I'm not going too far for that one.
I posted the one with Pertwee and his wife.
Ah. Well, what I found quite interesting personally was that I got a photograph of my father on a ship at the Festival of Britain, which is in 1952. And there was some Pathé footage of the Festival of Britain, which obviously was a nice little link for me to know my dad was there, having his picture taken on the boat itself, and a shot on the video of the boat he was on during that period. So that was quite nice. Not a shot of him, but a shot of... I'm rambling. Anyway, so that concludes news for this week. Right. Anything anybody wants to say? No? Okay, shut up then.
I hear birds in the background. I mean, does this mean we're going to go into an alternate timeline? And the Dream Lord will...
And
anyway.
Freezing to death, yes.
Mary.
Oh, yes.
We,
Fred and I finished watching The Trial of the Time Lord, and she really liked it. She was not expecting that ending at all.
Yes, it was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it?
Oh, I liked it. This was the first time I'd seen it.
It's just really weird that it was sort of rather thrown together.
Yeah. Hmm. But we enjoyed it.
I like Trial of the Time. I like Colin Baker.
I don't understand why people complain about it. It was really good.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a Marmite thing. I quite like it. Other people hate it. I think they hate it just because it was the thing that put Doctor Who on hiatus, wasn't it? Again. Before we ended up losing Colin Baker. And also that theme tune doesn't do it any favours.
Right. That was the biggest problem I had with
terrible.
It.
Mm-hmm. Terrible theme tune.
Anyway, Mary, who's our sponsors?
Whoone.co.uk.
Would that be whoone.co.uk?
You did just say that, Kirby.
And Lavazzi.
Yeah, well done, yes, Lavazzi. You do deserve a mention. I've been on at Meninda in regards to getting a possible prize for our birthday episode next month. It's our fourth birthday.
Can we have one?
No, we have to go to junior school. What do they call it? Preschool, not preschool. What's the one after preschool? Oh, reception in primary school when it comes to September, because we're 4 years old.
Reception, yes.
That's gone right over the American's head. There's nothing really new, actually. Sonic Screwdrivers, Doctor Who Magazine 472, and the DWM special, 37 official guide to the 2013 series. So nothing new coming out as yet. But if you go to the whoone.co.uk website, you'll find lots of good stuff. And if we just travel up to Ryde, apparently, which is only 5 minutes away, we can actually go in the shop ourselves, according to Kirby. We can just step out the door and walk straight into the shop.
Well, it's better than we can do.
Yeah, it is better.
In regards to Lavazzi, you mentioned, wasn't it? Meninda might be providing us with a prize for a competition for our fourth
You just mentioned
show.
That.
Yes, but I didn't say what the prize was.
Okay, say what the prize is.
Well, he said, and I'm not holding him to this yet, because I'll believe it when I see it, but he said we can have a Dalek scarf.
A Dalek scarf? Ooh.
Now, I know what you're going to say. Oh, I wanted a Tom Baker fourth Doctor scarf. Tough. I think that's very generous of them. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I'm yet to ask Who Won if they want to provide some of the tat that they... I know that Nick keeps in a box out the back, the stuff that they can't sell. But I must get round to asking him. Anyway, that'll be next month.
Well, he could send some of it to us.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. So anyway, Ben can't make it because it's Easter, so we're more or less done. So thanks everybody for being on the show this week, unless you've got anything else to add. No, I didn't think you had. Right, next week, when are we recording and what are we doing?
Well, I hope we're doing it on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm talking about the podcast, not what you want to do.
We are doing Let me go there.
State of Decay.
Yeah,
State of
Decay. You forgot that quickly, Kirby. Matthew mentioned it in his feedback.
Yes, Matthew mentioned it too. Yes.
I
believe it or not, I haven't seen that one, so I'm kind of looking forward to it.
I'll have to dig it out.
I haven't seen that one yet either.
Over there. Good. Well, that's for next week. And apparently we're recording on Sunday, unless I don't get back from Kent in time. Because I'm going to Kent on Friday and Saturday. Should be back Saturday night. I've got work on Sunday. Oh, I should be back then, shouldn't I? I've got work on Sunday. So, yeah, okay. At the moment, we'll pencil in for Sunday until, unless Debbie says, not you, Debbie says something with the word off on the end of it.
Shunt everything down to mine, if you like.
Oh, yeah. You might have faster broadband. So until then, thank you, and thank you, Debbie, and thank you, everybody. You. Thank you, Magic and Star, for being a pain in the... I'll see you again next week. Bye!
Bye-bye, Alton. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The past is another country. 1987's just the Isle of Wight.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.